Good afternoon. I have a couple of new faces today. Always so nice. Judy is here. Very nice to see you. And I don't know your name.
No, it's Jeroen.
Jeroen.
Yes, it's Dutch.
I see. Well, I was married to a Dutchman for 40 years, so I'm glad to greet you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who hasn't been here? Oh, Heinrich.
I cannot see you.
Heinrich is my old pal from Poreg and from California and from here.
Yeah.
Very happy to see you. So, several things are on my mind. One is form. We have a kind of odd relationship with form in my experience of Koban. It's a little different from Michael's. Michael went to Tassajara, so he got the full Tassajara Zen Center treatment and learned how to do things. Koban, on the other hand, although we had four and sometimes five sesshins a year, taught us only Orioki, basically. And then he himself was the leader and led the service, so that if you wanted to, which I did, see how he did it, you just sat there and watched him and tried to figure out what he was doing. And that was troubling, because once you thought you had it, he'd change it. It would be totally different another time. So then I would go to him and say, how do you do it? And he'd say, well, you know, make it up. So that for a while worked, sort of. He took me up to Arcata to do a wedding that he was supposed to do, and as a way of introducing me to how to do a real ceremony. And it was in a restaurant, and the bride and groom and Koban and I sat together in one of those banquettes, and then the audience, so-called, sat in front in chairs, in restaurant chairs. And there was a flower arrangement on the table and a candle. And Koban had a little cup for the wisdom water, but nothing for it. So he just plucked one of the flowers out of the flower arrangement and then did the wisdom water and spritzed everybody. And that was my lesson in how to do a wedding. So at one point, Blanche Hartman felt sorry for me, and I think she was worried, actually, that I was going to spread this sloppy way, you know, into the future. And so she insisted that I come with her to Japan. She asked me three times, and I only agreed on the third time. I didn't think I could go. I had family, I had a lot of responsibilities, but she said I needed to do it. And by that time I had received the brown robe, but I had no idea how to wear it. Koban wouldn't show me. And so I didn't wear it. He told me when I received it that it wasn't mine and that I could lend it to somebody. If somebody came without one, that it would be available for somebody else to wear. So I was afraid to wear it. I didn't wear it for 2 years, and that's one thing that disturbed Blanche very much. And so finally I agreed to go. I thought, well, I'll learn how to do it. I'll learn all the ways to do it, because this was a month practice period at Rinso Inn, which is Suzuki Roshi's place. And Suzuki Roshi's son was there, and his wife. And the whole thing was set up so that 12 women would practice together with Suzuki Roshi and another monk that he brought in from Sojiji. So we got there, and they took us into the Hondo. Amazing, full of all golden things and brilliant scarlet things and huge candelabra, and it was nothing like anything that I had ever seen. And introduced us to the three teachers, Blanche, and I've forgotten the monk's name, a very sweet man, and Hoetsu Roshi. And they started to tell us how to do. And immediately they were disagreeing. Completely disagreeing. You do the bell this way. No, no, you do it this way. Well, it's so Gigi, we do it this way. Well, I learned it at Tassajara this way. And so they absolutely did not agree on any of it. And they had to separate themselves and go off in a corner and decide which one they were going to choose. And I thought, oh, that's how it works. You choose a way, and then everybody agrees, and then you do it. It isn't cast in bronze. It isn't sacrosanct. It isn't special. It's just the way that makes it easiest for the whole thing to roll along for everyone's practice, so that we don't have to make it up every single time. So I always took that as Koban's instruction to decide on something, make something up, but then hold to it and respect it, unless there's some reason to change it. So as we're practicing, I begin to notice little things that could be changed and improved, and I'd like to point them out, not as a strict teacher, you know, shaking a finger, but as a suggestion for smoothing out the practice so that it is easier for everybody and easier for you too. One of it is the sounds that we make with our bowls, getting them out and arranged and putting them away again. On the first day or so, it's hard to do that, especially the ceramic bowls, without knocking them and making a lot of noise. When I sat a session here with Catherine Thanis one year, we had Oryoki in the Zendo, and everyone was sitting around and people were making quite a lot of noise. And she just stood up and said, "You all be quiet!" I almost fell over. She's yelling at everybody. But that was her way of creating silence. I don't want to yell at anybody. I think the noise we make is completely inadvertent. And I just want to encourage you to be mindful of what you're doing while you're doing it, because if you're really there, you won't be so likely to make a noise you don't need to make. And if you do, it's not the end of the world. It's just a way of making the whole thing as peaceful as possible. The ones who are doing the Doan Ryo, the Han and the bells, feel a little tentative, some of them. Not all of them, but some. And I would encourage the sound makers to take the making of sound as a serious encounter with the bell or the wood. That it's not... you inflicting something on something else. It's you meeting something and being met by it. And so if you can bring your own sincerity to the instrument and the instrument of the instrument, then the sound you make will feel more sincere and more full. It takes some practice, I know. And it's a wonderful practice. I hope you all have a chance to try it, because it's an essential part of our practice. We do these ways so that we don't have to watch a watch, that we can forget about the time and just listen. In a monastery, there are noises all day long, and you just know what time of day it is and what's happening every single moment. And Koban said you can tell who's doing the han by how they do it. Oh, Joe's doing it today. Oh, Mike's doing it tomorrow. You can tell. You can tell who's doing it. So please enjoy the rhythm section, or the time section, because that's an essential part of the gift we give to each other to make this practice work smoothly. And our chanting is really doing quite well. I just want to suggest that you be sure, when you're standing face to face and chanting the Heart Sutra and the Metta Sutra, that you are aware of each other's voices and joining your voice with everyone, so that it's all one sound that's arising. Without self-consciousness, without thinking about it, without thinking about the words, but just to let it rise up out of your body. Rise up out of your toes. And it's a joining sound that we do together. It's a very fine way to start the day. The sounds that we make, some of them, like the han, come at it with an end. And the meal, the cook's bell is one of them. The sogu's last clap is one of them. And the han is one of them. And all of those are to wake us up. So we tend to get in a daze, as always. I tend to get in a daze, as always. And when that tock, 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 bam, comes, that means something. So those of you who are doing those things, the cook's bell goes bam, bam, bing, bam. And that means, oh, it's time to eat. So there's a real communication that comes through us as we do those things, even though it seems maybe fancy, a little extra. But I think not. I think it gives us some kind of form in which to develop our own practice. One more thing is that we don't mix the food from the first bowl into the second and third bowl. That the first bowl is Buddha's bowl, and that food is especially for Buddha. So the second and third bowl can be mixed, but the first bowl not. The first bowl we hold ourselves, we don't give it to someone else to hold, and we treat it with a deep respect as Buddha's bowl. And the food within it is feeding Buddha. This is, of course, metaphorical, but it's helpful to keep that kind of respect in our meal. Otherwise, it becomes kind of a messy business of food passing around. And it's better just to feed Buddha and feed Buddha quickly. It's not supposed to be a contemplative meal or a fancy meal at all. It's not like Thich Nhat Hanh's way where you chew each bite 30 times before you swallow. It's very different from that. In a monastery, you eat like the wind, whew, like that, and it's over. It's very hard to get fed for us. I mean, it's impossible, really. And also, if you don't get enough, be sure to get more in the kitchen. There's always more food. Ariyoki isn't always enough, so that's important too. I think that's all I could think of. Are there questions about that? Yes. We have the tradition of speaking it, and some people sound like they have a tradition of chanting it all in one tone, and that sounds rather much nicer than our speaking it, I would say. Maybe we should talk about that. It seems like it would be very nice. It's not a Zen tradition. So we've just picked it up because it seemed like a very nice balance to the Heart Sutra. Heart Sutra brings up compassion in terms of wisdom, and Metta Sutra brings up wisdom in terms of compassion. And so to be reminded of both sides always seems like a very fine idea. So chanting it would be nice if... Could you lead it? Just set the tone.
You just coyoted me.
I did, didn't I? You can say no.
Like it could be the same tone as the prior chant, I suppose. So I'll be happy to say if you said that.
Thank you. Let's try it and see. Thank you.
Yeah, even our Heart Sutra is not really, we don't chant it like many other sinners either. It's,
we used to,
but we kind of got winded.
Well, nobody chants the Heart Sutra with Mukugyo in English.
We used to.
Yes, we used to do it, but that's not traditional at all.
Koji, I thought they chanted it, but in English, but not with the Mukugyo, but they did more of the chant. Like, anyway, I'm just saying that it would be, if you could match it with the way we do it.
Is it typical Shoto to do it in English or in the language you understand? Because I was like raised in the Rinzai, and we did it in the Pali version.
Uh-huh. Well, we do it in the Sino-Chinese one, Hanya Haramita. That's Sino-Chinese.
Okay.
Japanese, excuse me. Sino means Chinese.
I saw it in the dining room. There's the version I knew.
Yes, yes.
Or a Shoto thing.
Right, kanji zai byo zatsu gyo zin hanya hara mita ji shoken go, etc., etc., etc. It's beautiful to chant it that way. And a mukugyo, it's perfect for that. It's the way that Japanese actually speak is dot, 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 dot. They don't go up and down at all. So it's different. It's one of the places where, one of the many, many places where the Japanese tradition comes up into America, and then we have to figure out, and Holland and Germany and everywhere else, how do we take this in? How do we make it ours? Judy?
Yes, with regard to chanting in general, it's my understanding that we don't take the same note. We don't all do it on the same note. that there's one place where Kogan says to, when your stomach hurts, you groan, and you don't worry about making it a beautiful groan, and that you should chant from down there.
I don't think when he's...
That doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I think when he was talking about chanting yourself by yourself, not with others.
Oh. So everyone should be on the same note?
Pretty much. If we have a good kokyo who can set the tone, sometimes there's a kokyo who can't set the tone, and then people really struggle. Jerry?
The question of whether it's Soto or Rinzai, I don't know the various traditions, but I can say that virtually the only liturgy that Zen Center had in at Tsukoji, when Suzuki Roshi was alive, in the Kanji and all the Satsuji.
Yes.
And I noticed we record with those Kanji, and I noticed that in the manual of Zen, the other Suzuki,
yes,
that there is virtually the same thing. And I suspect that the Zen Center cards were taken from that. I don't know that, but they are virtually the same. And Jikoji, I believe, also, Jiro can say, someone, one of the residents here, also has the cards with both the English and that sign in Japanese.
The English underneath?
In the cards at Tsukoji years ago, the English was underneath.
I remember those.
I don't recall precisely what they are on the Tsukoji cards now.
Yes, underneath.
And the Soto book that you get has a whole English side, and then you flip it over and it opens up the other way and it's all Japanese.
Soto shoe.
So there it is in the Soto shoe.
Yeah.
The short of it, so far as I know historically, is that Suzuki Roshi was Soto lineage. So
yeah. Yeah, yeah. And Kogan, too. Yeah. Well, it's almost 4 o'clock. That was interesting. What I want to point out to you briefly is that Dogen always pointed out that those who are sitting are Buddha itself, that sitting itself is enlightenment, that delusion itself is enlightenment. So that although that's very hard to wrap the mind around, our mind wants to say one thing or the other. We are always polarizing everything that we think, but in fact, the truth of things is that it's all the same and not the same. So we have to have two words for it because, as Dogen says somewhere, there's an interpenetration of enlightenment and delusion, and delusion and enlightenment. And as Dogen says, sometimes a Buddha, sometimes an ordinary being. So the point I want to make today, and I'll just leave it at that, is that however ordinary you feel you are, however big a failure you feel that you are, how impure and unworthy or however you feel about your practice, that that itself is a delusional enlightenment, you could say. Only when pretensions collapse and delusions and enlightenment, as well as the Buddha's and sentient beings, at last function wholesomely. In other words, if you can be what you are in all its wholeness, then your practice is fulsome and wholesome. It's not when you become pure, it's not when you become blissful, it's not when you transcend. Buddha came down and touched the ground. He sat on the ground and touched the ground. So that's our practice. Be as it is, and let that be enough. And yet, work hard. Work real hard. You have to work hard at this. Okay? Thank you.